Happy Monday, everybody. Today we are going to discuss, or rather I'm going to introduce to you, a psychological strategy that I refer to as David Hoggin, somebody. You guys remember David Hogg of the Parkland shooting tragedy? Of course you do. Well, it seems like Turning Point USA is now engaging in this strategy of David hogging the public. And I wanted to be clear that is downright manipulative, and I've really had enough of it. Frankly, what happened over the weekend is that their TP Action COO, Tyler Boyer, went on a little bit of an X binge. I don't recommend it, which was then highlighted by Alex Clark, who has a show over there on Instagram. And I think it's therefore fair for us to turn our attention back to them. So welcome back to Candace. So let me put it to you this way. I'll give you a different scenario. If at this very moment, McDonald's publicly announced that their CEO was stepping down and they were going to replace him with somebody else, nobody would care, right? Like, there's not going to be any public outcry about them doing that. The average person doesn't even know who the current CEO of McDonald's actually is. But, however, giving you a different scenario, if out of nowhere, McDonald's announced that they were getting rid of the Big Mac, that they were changing their French fries and they're doing away with their chicken nuggets, there would probably be a reaction to that. People would be pretty angry. It would probably start trending. And it's because the reality is nobody actually cares about the corporate structure. But if you change the menu items, that actually changes the substance of the company for people. A very recent example of that, by the way, is the Cracker Barrel scandal, which was hilarious, but it was a good point for everybody to learn, right? Corporate over at Cracker Barrel effed around, and they found out pretty quickly that that old man on the logo, that inanimate old man that was with the cracker and the barrel, actually had more meaning to the public than their entire corporate division. They were ready to just walk away from it all because they got rid of the old man and his barrel. Now, I raise this only to say that I have seen multiple political organizations within recent years, especially when money starts pouring in, right? There's this like arrogance that sets in, and they start to delude themselves into believing that they're smarter than their customers, that they're smarter than their audience, so to speak, right? Like, the magic is actually the corporate structure. Audiences, I want to be very clear, will catch a vibe pretty quickly. Audiences are smart, they're perceptive, they will sense when something is off. And the harder that you try to convince them that their senses are not real and that they are imagined, the more obvious it actually becomes to them that their suspicions are correct. Something's not right. Now, to just keep up with the same analogy, Charlie Kirk was essentially the old man on the Cracker Barrel logo. People were invested in Charlie Kirk. We have, at this moment, no definitive understanding of what happened on the day that he was assassinated. But what we do know definitively is that the feds are lying to us. That is obvious. It is abundant. If you have if you're able to think thoughts, you recognize that something is very wrong with the story that has been presented to the public. And I think that what the public doesn't understand, and I count myself among the public, is why it seems as though Turning Point USA executives, and I'll say seems, are not even remotely interested in challenging that official narrative. They're not interested in challenging it publicly, at least. In fact, I think it was an ex-user that pointed out, he put it rather bluntly when he said, so they want us to forgive Tyler Robinson, but to attack the people that are trying to solve the murder of Charlie Kirk? Like, that's not right. Doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel good. Of threats of lawsuits, we're collecting evidence of it. What are we even talking about? And I want to say that what's been bothering me in particular are the micro lies. It seems that they're suddenly in the business of telling micro lies, tiny little misrepresentations, tiny little half-truths that right out of the gate seems altogether unnecessary. It really makes me wonder, who are they protecting exactly? You'll see oftentimes they and other influencers will invoke Erica as the reason that it's not appropriate to ask questions. It's just not appropriate. while Erica is still mourning for you guys to ask any questions. And I'm just going to come back at you with some common sense. What sort of widow wouldn't want people to investigate the assassination of their husband? She has not explicitly said that, but the influencers are invoking that, right? They're invoking, like, you just, it's not appropriate right now for people to be asking questions. That's what I mean when I say they are David hogging us, okay? You could also use another example, somebody that was on the right, Kyle Khashoggi. What essentially means is that when a tragedy takes place and we are emotional, our emotions are raw. Me especially, I think this was the first time where I couldn't really check my emotions. I'm just now like moving out of the grief stage. There will be people that then will try to manipulate you, right? They will try to manipulate you by using that strategy of saying, well, it would be really wrong for you to look beneath this layer or to ask a question about this. And it would be an injustice to Charlie Kirk's legacy, really. If you really loved him, then you shouldn't do this, okay? Because the tragedy just happened. And they did this, David Hogg. You're not allowed to question David Hogg. Like, he suddenly became an authority. And no matter what he said, we were kind of told by the journalist that it made perfect sense and he should go to Harvard. And, you know, obviously to the extent that anybody suffers and survives a school shooting, I'm with you. And I think that that's totally fair. But then when you go beyond that, it starts to feel a little bit like you're emotionally manipulating us and that you're actually trying to silence people who have valid questions or criticisms or concerns. That strategy, like I said, it worked on me in the beginning. I was definitely completely worked by it. And I was feeling like, even though I knew that they were telling white lies, that I should just allow it and to instead focus my entire attention on just unpacking the federal lies. But you know what? Over the weekend, I realized, actually, no. Lying, full stop, is weird. It's weird after a tragedy. It is weird after someone that you purport to be your best friend, you're so close. Why are you telling micro lies about that person? And actually, by exposing those lies, perhaps it will reveal a bigger picture. Because what would motivate it? What would actually motivate it? Now, I'll give you just one example here, and we're going to get into some stuff that's rather bombastic, if I'm being frank. But one example that I bit my tongue on a couple of weeks ago was when influencers randomly went on a full attack, like full attack mode against me, when I very casually, you guys watching the series, very casually mentioned that Catholics were hoping that Charlie was going to take the next step and convert. Like, of course, I'm Catholic. Of course, what would be wrong with me sharing that? Everybody was sharing their stories about Charlie and the conversations they were having. But for some reason, Candace saying, and I'll sum it up, effectively, it was like two sentences. Charlie was going through some spiritual changes towards the end. Catholics were hoping that he'd take the next step because he was praying the rosary. I never said he converted because he didn't. That would have been dishonest. But people were somehow really angry. Somebody clearly hit the panic button. Suddenly a bunch of videos were being made disputing the narrative. People were going, I knew Charlie and he was truly evangelical to his core. Blah, 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 blah. And I want to tell you this, it felt coordinated. It felt fake. It felt unnecessary. But most importantly, it was untrue. Okay, it wasn't true. And I'm going to share with you some more truth so that you can contextualize it. Charlie was attending Mass weekly. He was sometimes even attending Mass daily. He was not attending Pastor Rob McCoy's church. As I mentioned before, yes, he was praying the rosary. Charlie, in fact, was wearing the St. Michael pendant when he died, okay? As has already been publicized, Erica took a Catholic bishop with her to pray over his body on the day that he died. These are all indisputable facts. And it is also a fact, which was presented by Megyn Kelly, that a few weeks before his death, Erica had a priest come over to pray over them when some witches thought it would be funny, whatever, to put a hex on him. Okay. That's a lot of things that were happening behind the scenes. And the people at Turning Point USA knew those things to be true. Okay. They knew everything that I just shared with you, they knew for a fact. So I was a bit astonished when Andrew Colvett and Alex Clark similarly jumped in this inauthentic attempt to dissuade the idea that Charlie was softening on Catholicism. It read to me like just sheer hatred of Catholics for no reason at all. Here's what they said. I'll jog your memory. I want you to listen to this now in the context of all of the additional details that I just shared with you. Okay, take a listen.
Was he becoming Catholic?
No. But he really loved Catholic Mass. He loved the ritual of it. He loved the beauty of old Catholic churches and the stained glass.
And him and Erica would go sometimes.
Yeah, well, Erica's a cradle Catholic, but she ended up kind of like me. I grew up Catholic and First Communion and went to Catholic high school. But then I ended up becoming a Christian in college through a Protestant church, through a non-denominational kind of more experience. It was actually Presbyterian, and then it was kind of non-denominational. And I think Erica kind of follows that same path. She and I share that.
Also, by the way, I just want to draw attention to, she's posted a photo of her and Charlie and the kids in Mass before, mm-hmm. and somebody in the comment section said, oh, are you guys converting? And she said, no, we just like attending sometimes. So she herself had said no.
Yeah,
probably.
And I think Charlie, one of the things, Charlie really hated worshiping in like a gym, you know, or some sort of kind of blank space that you just turn into church. There's no problem. He didn't have a problem with the act of that. He just didn't prefer it. And he loved, again, the ritual, the ancient, you know, feel of a Catholic Mass, and the fact that everybody around the world that was worshiping as Catholic, he loved that. So he had some really big theological hangups with that. You can go check the videos out, him debating with Michael Knowles, you know, in good fun. I mean, they were dear friends, but they loved kind of debating the whole Protestant versus Catholic thing.
Now, given everything that I've shared with you, does that conversation register as like totally and completely authentic, or kind of trying to be like, yeah, no, like he loved the architecture of things, but beyond that, nothing was happening? Like that's not fully honest. And it registered to me like a cover up of sorts. And I was wondering, like, what are we exactly covering up? Like, I wasn't going Catholic gang, wasn't trying to bring back a 30 years war. I was just sharing the communications that I had with him. And now I felt like suddenly so many people were racing to establish that his legacy was anything but Catholic, right? Like he was super de-duper Judeo-Christian. And ironically, it was Judeo-Christianity that I was challenging him on personally, like privately. And I was speaking to him about the political pressures of it, the way that I felt because of last year, that it registered to me like more of a cult than a true theology or a religion or a religious aspect, rather. And it was back in February of this year when out of nowhere, he's the one that actually messaged me. And said, and said, Catholicism is sounding better and better in February of 2024. This is kind of when we started having that discussion. We should chat soon. Catholicism is looking better and better. Okay. I then offered back to him a chart just showing how the phrase Judeo-Christianity kind of is really associated with the dawn of the nation of Israel, right? And we did chat about it. We chatted about, talked about it a lot. And I was thrilled, like I said, and I was being honest that he was attending Mass. Okay. But I want to again state that Charlie was not attending Rob McCoy's church. He was attending Mass. So it registered to me again as somewhat disingenuous when Pastor Rob McCoy came out and effectively asked me to, you know, stop looking into all of the things that had happened in the lead up to Charlie Kirk's assassination, or at least asking me to pause it rather would be more fair of an interpretation until the memorial, right? I'm going to jog your memory here. Here is what Pastor Rob McCoy wrote on his Instagram after I exposed the now infamous Hamptons meeting, which took place. He wrote this: Charlie Kirk was my friend and I was his pastor. I want to simply say this regarding Candace Owens. Charlie Kirk was a friend to Candace and never publicly spoke poorly of her, although he disagreed with her. He never operated nor entertained gossip or innuendo concerning Candace. My only comment I offer regarding Candace is this: I only wish that at this tragic time of mourning, she would be the friend to Charlie that he was to her. He would never have treated Candace or her family in such a way had, God forbid, this tragedy been hers. All friend loves at all times. Proverbs. Now, I want to be very clear. If Charlie was a friend of mine, I sure hope if I was assassinated in front of the world that he would raise hell to figure out what actually took place in that day. That's not being a friend. A friend is not someone who stays silent when lies are being told by the federal government. That's not a friend. Again, emotionally manipulative. The family can't have you finding out who actually killed him. The family can't have you looking into those things of who was pressuring him behind the scenes. That's not good for the family. It bothers me. I have to be honest with you. That bothers me. I don't even like that to the untrained eye, he's kind of representing himself or representing Charlie as like a current congregant of his church. I feel like a lot this year I have been feeling as though these pastors are just not as honest as they should be, right? Is that the vibe? Like, a lot of pastors are not really so concerned with the truth, is what I would say. So we should zero in here on Rob and what his motivations might be, right? Why did he decide to post this after I revealed that Hampton's meeting? Well, you should know, I think most people do, that both his son and his daughter-in-law work for Turning Point USA. So whether you want to represent that or not, they have a financial stake in the future of the company. He heads up the faith division. So Charlie's faith and what direction it was going into would actually matter, right? It would actually matter if Charlie, and I never said he was going to, decided one day to become Catholic. It would have financial implications. I want to be clear, I never had a conversation that Charlie was in the process of converting, okay? But Rob in particular knew for an absolute fact that Charlie was done with Israel bullying him. That's what bothers me so much about this man. Him allowing these headlines, Charlie's pastor speaks out, you know, crushes Candace because of what she said, not whatever. I don't like it. He knew, and others knew, that Charlie was done with Israel bullying him, and I am now going to present you proof of what I am saying. This is an actual group chat, which happened 2 days before Charlie Kirk was assassinated. There were 9 people in total on this chat, including Charlie and Rob McCoy. I'm going to protect the names of the other 7 for now. To be clear, I might actually release a name every day this week, but I want to show you this because suffice it to say, Rob McCoy was on this text thread, and I think it helps contextualize him as a person, in my view, that he would attack me for telling the truth about the pressure that he was facing. Take a look. So Charlie writes in this group chat, just lost another huge Jewish donor, $2 million a year because we won't cancel Tucker. I'm thinking of inviting Candace. Somebody writes, ugh. Charlie writes, Jewish donors play into all of the stereotypes. I cannot and will not be bullied like this, leaving me no choice but to leave the pro-Israel cause. Then somebody writes, a donor writes, please do not invite Candace. That might feel good short term, but it's not good long term, in my opinion. Like all groups, you're going to get a wide variety of opinions. That nasty free will thing that God bestowed on us makes life frustrating at times after the dust settles a bit, maybe. So again, this is 48 hours before Charlie Kirk was assassinated. He was very clear and he was very explicit and he did not back down, not in that Hamptons meeting, which they're all lying about, nor in this text thread. I'm not going to reveal the names of the other 7. Actually, you know what? I disagree with myself 4 seconds ago. Let's just throw in Josh Hammer for funsies. He's on this chat, okay? So what are we to make of that? Okay, now that I'm showing you this and showing to you that the conversations were real, I want you to reflect, and it took me a lot of patience to allow the lies that were being woven and the misrepresentations of people that were pretending that I was just, high on lying about Charlie and the pressure he was under, the attacks that not just me, Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly faced for trying to stand up and tell the truth about what Charlie was actually going through. Why are you hearing it, though, from me and Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly? Is that weird? You got people that are hosting a show. Have they, in like one honorable thing, come out and said, like, you know what? F a couple of these donors who made his life a living hell in the last couple of weeks. Why haven't they done that? There's also a rabbi in that chat. Like, why hasn't anybody made that move to at least say, to vindicate what I have been saying about what he was going through? That registers to me as very suspicious. I'm going to frankly say that it's suspicious to me. It makes me think that in the same way that Charlie was being pressured by money, that you might be now run by that same money, that those same donors might be running you to correct the ship and to focus yourselves on eulogizing Charlie as something and someone that never once flinched, never once for a single second doubted the Israeli cause. Now they want us to suddenly believe the best way to honor Charlie is to shut up, the exact opposite of what he quite literally laid down his life doing, answering questions, Turning Point. Answering the questions is what he was doing in the second that he died, okay? And we all are feeling spiritually the same way, so I'm just going to say it. They're not grieving right. It's not up to us to decide how people grieve, but I will say unequivocally that you shouldn't grieve by lying or by gaslighting. Is that fair? Can we all agree? You should not grieve by lying and gaslighting the public. They want us to believe that the only way that we can support and honor Charlie's legacy is by donating our money. But it would not be supportive for us to try to figure out who killed him and why the feds are lying. We should instead just trust the feds and excuse their little half-truths that they're telling along the way. Now, on that point, they keep trying to make it seem like it's completely normal that 4 minutes after Charlie was shot, someone on their team nervously raced to grab the SD cards, specifically from the camera that is behind Charlie's head. And that was because during that time, they think it's like trying to make it normal that his instinct was to stand on Charlie's chair to actually violate a crime scene, but also to mysteriously just grab the SD card out of the camera, right? Not only are they pretending that that was completely normal, but they're also presenting it as though it was a heroic act. It was like a forthright, clarified act to do in that moment, and that anyone who uses their own eyes and sees it as maybe a little bit suspicious are just in the business of spinning conspiracies. Now, that's exactly what was communicated by Andrew Colvett when he sat across from Tucker Carlson, who was hosting Charlie's show. And gratefully, Tucker Carlson instantly responded with a much more sensible approach. Take a listen.
By the way, just one other conspiracy theory I just want to snuff out here. One of our dear friends that literally from the very beginning started with us and loved Charlie like a brother, he grabbed the SD cards out of the camera afterwards. And there's all these conspiracy videos about, like, why did he grab the SD cards? Well, first of all, they're in the possession of the FBI. Okay. It's not like he took them and like ran off with them. Second of all, I asked him personally, I said, why did you do that? And he looked at me and this was his answer. He said, because I know people can be evil. And he did not want that footage being grabbed by somebody. There was videos of people after the incident going and stealing hats off the table. I mean, so I'm so grateful he did that and that was his instinct. He's like, I'm depressed to know that that was why I did that. But I knew that I had to protect that footage because I know I wanted. I mean, you know, you're recording in like 4K, you know, and so I'm so glad he did that. But Charlie knew the existence of evil. And
well,
so,
can I say, yeah. I think that people can feel the existence of evil, and that just to put in a sympathetic word for people who are trying to make sense of this and coming to the wrong conclusions, I think they're motivated for the most part by pure intent. I think they don't trust the authorities. They have every reason to feel that way. I know that for a fact. Not the Trump administration, just in general. Like,
yeah.
We're not, you know, there's been a lot of lying, and it's corroded the trust. That's not their fault, actually. They're the victims of it.
That's a good point. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, thank you, Tucker, for saying that. And this is the reason why Tucker is so big, because he has this perspective. He understands like what the average person is thinking here. And the average person looks at that and they think it's shady. And, you know, saying that there was this heart-wrenching moment where you were worried because people were stealing stuff on the table, but also you took the SD card out and not the very expensive camera, which is if you were worried about stealing and theft, maybe you would take the camera. But more importantly there is he says that the feds, that he gave it to the feds, right? Now, he doesn't insinuate, obviously, that they don't have the footage. Turning Point does have the footage. That's very clear. I saw partially the footage, which means it made it back home, or maybe they had it back home because they were recording it live, whatever it is. It was being live streamed. But what he said actually conflicts with what Tyler Boyer is about to say, what he said over this weekend, okay? Tyler Boyer, like I said, he's a COO of Turning Point Action, and he went on this kind of bender, worst kind of bender, Twitter bender, defending the organization. He thought he was defending them against public sentiments, during which time he refutes what Andrew Colvett is saying about the SD cards. Andrew says the Turning Point employee was worried about theft, but Tyler says that actually he was instructed to secure the SD cards before the campus went on to lockdown. Now here's the tweet, so I can show you that. Somebody said, rightfully, emotional manipulation and falsely equating scrutiny as some form of hate speech is not going to work here. You and Colvett admitted that the staff tampered with cameras and the most crucial video evidence in the largest political assassination in decades. Hiding makes him look guilty. And Tyler countered, dude did not tamper with anything. Yes, he did. It's crime scene, the law enforcement officers asked them to turn them over immediately so they didn't get lost in commotion before they took everyone into lockdown. Now, that is just not true. That is not true. What Tyler is saying is not true. I spoke to that Turning Point individual, as I told you, and he never once mentioned that police officers, I explicitly asked him, why did you take the SD cards out specifically of the camera behind? And the answer that I was given, which sounded more like what Andrew Colvett said, you know, I was emotional. I knew that Charlie was dead. And my instinct, he told me, was to make sure that I secured the footage so that Erica would not have to see it again. Like, he didn't want Erica to have to see it and have to relive it. That is what he said to me on the phone. Nothing about police officers. No one's ever heard police officers ask them to secure the footage before lockdown until Tyler Boyer tweeted this weekend, I don't like it, okay? I just don't like it. Now, to be fair, Tyler is making it clear that he is responding to all of these tweets or exes, whatever we're supposed to call them, because there have been people, he says, that have flat out accused the organization of having a hand in Charlie's murder. He doesn't share when or where exactly that happened. I think people feel you're being dishonorable by not questioning the narrative, but I haven't read anybody that's explicitly accused them of murder. In fact, the tweets that he's responding to all seem to be pretty fair, in my opinion. You know, now regarding the missing campus footage, there is a user that begged Tyler to file an FOIA request, and that user wrote this: "Please, I beg you, focus on getting the security footage of the sequence pre-jump off the Losey building where we can see Robinson in shot position and corroborate the story. Like, file an FOIA, get that footage, keep it simple." And he responds and he says, "Guys, there's camera footage all over that campus that the police have, plus all the cameras that we had. They likely won't release it until the trial." Now, there's just one problem with that narrative, right? If they have all this footage and they're just not releasing it because they just want to, they're just worried about the trial. They want to make sure they win the trial. What's wrong with that narrative is the manhunt that took place. If indeed they have tons of footage from all these different angles and some of it in 4K, which they do, this is why we've been saying the feds are lying from day one, then the first time that footage should have been deployed was during the 33-hour manhunt, right? Why didn't they release more footage at that time? Right? If they were actually interested in catching the killer, why only release a blurry image when there is, as he mentions, footage everywhere, all over that campus, every inch? Are we supposed to honestly believe at that time their thought process in the middle of a manhunt was, well, let's not release too much except for a blurry image because I know we don't have him, but in case we do have him, when we do get him, we want to make sure that we are able to try him by not releasing footage, which makes no sense, by the way. I think this is what happens when a company loses their, as South Park ribbed him, master debater, right? What they're saying does not make sense. These people could not win in college campus debates without Charlie, okay? Because the reality is, if releasing footage, okay, if releasing clear footage of what happened on that day means that you are going to lose in court, then it probably signifies that the person that you are trying to bring to court didn't do it. And if they're somehow vindicated by the footage, if you're like, I released the footage of him jumping down on the center and I show him firing the shot, but like that totally vindicates him, then you got the wrong guy, right? Having more footage, examining more footage and examining more evidence should further incriminate Tyler Robinson. It should also go a very long way in getting people off of these quote unquote conspiracies. Common sense, this is what I said from the beginning. Release the footage, which you do have in your possession. It's not like just the feds have this footage. Release the footage because then people will move on from quote unquote conspiracies. So everything they're saying right now doesn't make sense. They're not smarter than the public, right? And Turning Point is not going to survive this sort of an attitude, name-calling, threats to sue, calling people demonic, possessed by demonic spirits because they're rightfully asking questions of the most high-profile political assassination since JFK. It's just not going to work. Free PR advice. It is not going to work. I want to show you one more thing too, because I am quite stunned by the audacity to call me out, Alex Clark, to like call me out by sharing on her profile something that's just fundamentally untrue. But before we do that, I'm going to throw it to a couple of our sponsors. First, Preborn, because I have watched many people that I'm close with be vilified because they've stood up for truth. I've felt the sting of injustice myself, but I've also felt something else, which is courage. I'm done playing defense. I think that we should not be watering down what we believe to be palatable, because silence is not kindness. It's actually consent. And right now, the greatest silence is around the lives that are ended before they even are allowed to take their first breath. If we're going to call ourselves defenders of life, we should act like it at all times, which is why I'm asking you to join me to fight back with action, with truth, with love. $28 is what it costs to give a free ultrasound to a woman that's in a crisis and considering abortion. So for just $28, you can help her see the life inside of her. You can give her truth that the culture most definitively will not. So you shouldn't sit this one out. Don't wait for permission. Be bold, be clear, be unapologetically pro-life. Go to preborn.org/Candace right now. Give $28. You can also give 10 times that amount if you can. This is the line that I think that we have to stand on. We have to stand for truth and what is right. We have to save lives from abortion and stand firm in the gospel. Again, that is preborn.org/Candace. Provide an ultrasound for $28. Also want to tell you guys about the Comet AI browser, because I know you probably spend a lot of time on your web browser every day. How much time do you spend clicking around online, searching, scrolling, typing, endless tabs? It's a lot. And now there is a new AI web browser from Perplexity that's called Comet that is completely changing the way that you are able to interact with your browser. Using Comet feels like having a personal assistant living in your web browser that can actually do things for you across the internet. Literally doing things across the internet, not just giving you answers. You can ask Comet to search, scroll for you. What I love most is that it takes that weeknight chaos away from you, and it turns it into a simple, stress-free thing. Like you can research dinners, how you can put together dinners. Just a few taps. I get personalized meal plans based on the family's preferences. Comet orders the groceries for me and gets them delivered right to my door. Comet can shop for you, make reservations, book travel, summarize articles or videos, send emails, schedule meetings, and a lot more, which will make your life easier. So go and take back your time online. Download Perplexity's new web browser, Comet, and let it work for you. Not the other way around. Check it out at pplx.ai/Candace. Again, that's pplx.ai/Candace. Lastly, I want to tell you guys about the wellness company, because did you know that most methylene blue that's being sold online right now is actually the same grade that's being used in fish tanks, which is pretty gross. You need to watch out for low quality bottles that are untested for heavy metals and made overseas. You can trust, however, the wellness company's Recharge, which is a doctor formulated supplement combining powdered methylene blue with NAD plus and PQQ. This methylene blue is USP grade, ensuring top tier purity for maximum safety and effectiveness. This is not the sketchy stuff you will find on Amazon. Recharge is formulated with research-backed ingredients to optimize brain function and cellular repair while supporting clean, lasting energy. Tap into cognitive and metabolic support that helps you stay energized, focused, resilient all day. Choose a trusted formula made for your body, not for fish tanks. Feel the difference with enhanced mental clarity, sustained energy, sharper focus, and protection against cognitive decline. And no, it won't turn your tongue blue. Head over to twc.health/Candace and use code Candace, and you'll get 15% off plus free shipping. Again, that's twc.health/Candace and use code Candace. All right, you guys. So how are we supposed to honor Charlie, right? You honor Charlie, of course, by donating to Turning Point USA. And shutting up and trusting the feds. Don't question anything because it's just not right or whatever. You shouldn't even question the things that Charlie was questioning, right? The spin is in. I got really annoyed last night going through. Somebody tagged me and said, you see Alex Clark posted and tried to make it seem like I lied about the new Doge department when I literally shared the email from Charlie. They're even using this kind of like, I call it Christian slop, okay? Because what they're serving up to you is, well, if you're a good Christian, you shouldn't do this. Like they're kind of saying, it's demonic. You're possessed by a demon if you want to pursue truth. Said literally no one ever but Satan incarnate, okay? Truth is truth. It is always appropriate. Another one of these talking points for coming out is people are doing this for clicks. They're motivated by money. Do you guys understand the tens of millions of dollars that Turning Point USA made in the 2 weeks following Charlie Kirk's assassination? It would be insane for a person to suggest that if a random guy on YouTube catches a million views discussing ballistics, which there have been many gun guys who have done videos on ballistics and caught a million views, that that's somehow immoral because they're maybe going to make $10,000 if they keep that up for an entire month. Like, that is insane. And it actually relies on financial literacy to think that that's immoral. Good for them. Good for them. If you have a small account and you somehow got a million views because you told the truth, then bless you. Okay. Don't let them shame you. You're doing it for clicks. No, their account talks about ballistics all the time. This is now just a political assassination, the most high profile ever, and people want to understand every aspect. So we're clicking and we're watching these individuals that look like they know what they're talking about, especially in the absence of any truth coming from the quote unquote authorities. So what are we supposed to believe? That the more moral thing would be for us to behave like Turning Point USA employees? You know, Alex Clark calling me out, you're kidding me? Should I do what she did? And it would have been more moral for me to invite the Wall Street Journal a literal week after Charlie is murdered to photograph me in high boots standing over his memorial site at the office, like the outside memorial vigil where people mourn and drop off flowers and gifts, because that's exactly what Alex Clark did. And I thought it was icky. I thought it was gross, but I didn't say anything because everybody mourns in their own way. But I got to stop saying that. I got to stop saying everybody grieves in their own way. This is the article that was published on September 18th. So we can assume that they at least photographed her one day and interviewed her one day earlier, right? That's being charitable. So this was done latest, again, 1 week after Charlie was assassinated. Again, take a look at this. Pull that up. I'm going to pull this photo up because I just want to look at the photo. This is literally her being shot in front of the gifts that people are dropping off for Charlie. But maybe it's Photoshopped. Doesn't look like it is to me. Even if it was Photoshopped, I would be losing my mind. I don't understand how anyone would let this go out and think that it's okay if they knew Charlie. I couldn't even speak to the press that week. I still haven't spoken to the press about Charlie Kirk, actually. Haven't even given one interview about Charlie Kirk because it felt icky to me. I'm just focused on investigating his murder. Anyways, I want to read a little blurb from this article. Again, published September 18th. Alex Clark was about to head to the airport for a work trip to celebrate the first anniversary of her podcast when she heard the news. Her boss, Charlie Kirk, had been shot. She says, quote, "The very first thought that popped into my head was, I'm so glad that Charlie knew Jesus," said Clark, 32, who hosts the Maha-friendly podcast Culture Apothecary for Turning Point USA. "The second thought was, what will happen now? And the third thought was, thank God Trump is president." I don't know. You, people around the world didn't even know Charlie. Okay. Third thought, thank God Trump is president. Like MAGA. Did you go MAGA? Did you go like, I'm glad he knows the Lord, and then MAGA? What are we missing here? Does that feel okay at all? It goes on to say she praises the FBI director Kash Patel and his deputy Dan Bongino for their leadership in the hunt for the suspect. What's so crazy is that we have them in office because of Charlie, Clark said. So honor the feds, quick pick outside, and also MAGA, MAGA hard. That is like, I'm sorry, I get it. Everybody grieves differently, okay? But not that way. The last thought that I had as I spent days crying, okay, had difficulty physically pulling myself out of bed, felt like I was being a bad mother, was, man, I'm sure glad Donald Trump is president. MAGA. I didn't feel that way. In fact, I was angry. I remember feeling angry when Trump moved to kind of like do a same time post, Bibi Netanyahu, and then like publishes a picture of Charlie with an Israeli flag behind. I was pretty angry about that. I thought, yuck, that's gross. Have you no dignity and respect? Post a picture of him with his family, you know, trying to like already sow seeds into people's minds that like, no, he like kind of died for Israel, loved Israel so much, this would be appropriate, especially in the context of the message I just read to you. It was gross. But anyways, I don't know why, but the people that are critiquing us for investigating the murder are not critiquing themselves and not holding a mirror to themselves. Anyways, Alex has decided to share a total half-truth PR spin on another tweet from Tyler Boyer, where he responds to someone asking about Charlie establishing a Doge department. Again, we presented that to the public. We showed the internal email, the internal memo that went out. It was Charlie in his own words. We showed the whole email. I didn't read the paragraph where he announced that Justin Strife would be the COO, but we read the entirety related to the Doge department. And here's what Tyler says about that. He says, she took a sentence and made something up. TPUSA doesn't audit every year, always has. Charlie constantly looked for ways to make everything we do more efficient. That's TPUSA. It operates 8 times more effectively than any other similar operation. So what did I make up when I shared an email and Charlie said he wanted to establish a new Doge department? Why would he call it new if he was doing it every year? And wow, what foresight you had as a company that's been around for like 10 years or more, maybe even more than 10 years, that you were doing Doge since the beginning? No, you're conflating and it's dishonest. It's dishonest. The audit has F all to do with Doge. The audit is what 501c3s are instructed to do. Audit, get an independent auditor and audit yourselves, or else the IRS will hound you. Now, when you are auditing yourselves, I will guarantee you the Clinton Foundation audited themselves annually. That does not mean that there is not corruption. It does not mean, it means that you're doing things that are above board. From a government perspective, it does not mean that within your own organization there is not corruption. That is the reason for a Doge department, at least according to what Elon Musk said. Nobody, when he established Doge with Vivek Ramaswamy, was thinking that he was going in there because he was going to see if they're violating the IRS laws. No, I think he went in there to see wasteful spending and to see where the money was going, where our tax dollars was going. That's the vibe I got. So they're relying on us to be, again, financially illiterate, to not understand how it works. I shared a 501c3 lawyer with them. So I met her in her offices with Charlie, and she explained the reasons why she said that you got to get an independent auditor. I actually think that for organizations of a certain size, you're required by law to do an annual audit if you're 501c3. I think it's state by state that guides that. But to present this like this means we're above board, I have a feeling some people are going to die on that sword, because the reality is that big companies, inevitably, you will find corruption. And I'm hearing some stuff, okay? A lot of contractors, that's something that you can do as just one example. That's completely legal, but utterly immoral, is if you're outsourcing all of the millions of dollars to contractors and you're getting kickbacks. That's just one example, okay? So I take money from donors and then I show that I'm paying out to a contractor who doesn't work for Turning Point USA, but that contractor is then somehow paying me back. That would be something that wouldn't flag the IRS, but then would flag a CEO and a Doge department if they started looking at where the money was spending. I hope that clarifies matters. Now, shifting gears only slightly, I don't often or really ever speak about my faith journey, right? Because I'm still on it. And I don't want to make a mistake or be wrong. And in many ways, I kind of feel like this pressure that I don't want to let Catholics down because I don't know everything. And I prefer the people that have been Catholic forever to speak on things as I'm still a student. But I do want to say that a major clue for me that being non-denominational was no longer working for me happened because of things politically. When I tried to express certain questions about the modern state of Israel and was instead met with what I can only describe as cult-like behavior. You're seeing it right now, right? Judeo-Christian after Judeo-Christian, making videos, Candace. It's like cult-like behavior. You can't leave, right? There's only one way out of here. People quoting scripture to actually fulfill what became quite obvious to me was just their political ends. And yeah, people taking money to do that. Keeping it above bar, it's not illegal, but you are taking money. You're taking free trips. So what are your motives here? If you're citing scripture to defend the actions of Bibi Netanyahu, you're a fraud. Of course, you're a fraud. And if you're accepting money to do that in the process, you're worse than a fraud. Anyways, I want to show you guys this clip that someone sent me. This was a sermon which was given by a pastor on September 21st, 2025. Now, it's not necessary to name the Judeo-Christian pastor, right? I'm never trying to put any fire on them, because I actually think what they're doing is important, because I find out about all of these sermons because their congregants are sending them to me, right? They've got the CIA in their own congregation and people are going, and I stopped attending that day because I realized something's not right here. I want you to listen to this pastor's words because you might too feel similarly inspired to recognize that something is wrong. And I want to also be clear here. It's not every pastor. It wouldn't be fair for me to say that. But pastors that have a very strong political bent, something's not right there. All right. Now to tee this up, the title of his sermon is What Has Defiled You? And he has decided for this particular sermon to pull from Paul's letter to the Corinthians. And that specific biblical passage that he cites is chapter 7, verse 1. And it reads, the Bible reads, "Therefore, beloved, since we have these promises, let us cleanse ourselves from everything that defiles body and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God." Now, you don't need to be a priest or a pastor to think right now about what you might perceive is the point of that passage. Probably thinking through it. Yeah, yep, it's important. Body, spirit. Probably not what you're thinking right now is that this has something to do with Megyn Kelly. You're probably not thinking Paul wrote this letter to the Corinthians because there's a point that he wants to prove about Megyn Kelly. But he's going to get there. That's how this pastor's going to get there. He's going to explain that. Take a listen.
Why am I bringing this up? Because I was watching an interview with Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly, and this is what they said. Everyone under 30 in America is against Israel. The older generation's not, because we've seen the Six-Day War in 1967. There wasn't a narrative that was so prevalent right now with foolish people that are so deceived, like a Candace Owens and like a Nick Fuentes, and young people are eating that up, and they're changing their philosophy on what these people say, that do not base your ideology unless somebody has a Bible open. That is where your ideology comes from. You're going to be like that tree-hugging hippie mom that I'm trying to save her kids from being bitten by a rattlesnake and dying, and she's all worried about some habitat when she knows she's not welcoming in rattlesnakes in her home. And our ideologies, when we really, really think about them, they've been formed by a society that is not basing everything they believe out of the Word of God. And I challenge you today, if I've said anything that you don't think is right, bring your Bible and show me. Because if I'm wrong, I want to know.
Challenge accepted. Challenge accepted. I really, like, look, far be it from me. I'm not a seminarian. I really don't think that is what Paul, I don't think it was about Nick Fuentes. Call me crazy. I know you guys do on Sundays, but I don't think it was about Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens and the modern created state of Israel. Again, I could be wrong. I'm open, like you, to being incorrect, but it's just like there's something that is so fundamentally disgusting, and I hope you guys agree, about using the Bible to justify your own personal rants, using the Bible to justify why you're attacking somebody, preaching a sermon. Like, just start a podcast. You can be like me, right? I'm not sitting here going, turn your Bible here and you are, you know, defiled and blah, blah, blah. And what this really means is like that turning point is like, that's, there's something so incredibly evil about that. He has a quick second here when he wraps up his point about me that I want to get to, because I've started to realize, I don't even think he knows what defile means, actually. Take a listen.
You need to go to the Lord and say, what has defiled me? Hopefully, some of you that have been defiled with the nation of Israel because you've been in an echo chamber of Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens, that defilement has now come off of you, and you're going to block them because they're anti what Scripture says. What defiles you? What defiles you?
So I think what he is saying, that if I'm being charitable here, he's suggesting like you'll somehow be saved if you block me on Insta. What is this? Actually, what is that? I'll tell you what it is. It's completely heretical in a theological sense, but it's also unhinged. It's just unhinged. He looks unhinged. It's like he, it's like so much relies on him getting his point across. So he just like opens his Bible, points to a verse, and just throws it up and says whatever he wants to. He's basically me on like AIM when I was in the eighth grade, picking out quotes from like, you know, whatever those quote websites are and just like throwing it on my away message. There's no rhyme or reason that he's doing this. Just feeling that he has, and he wants to express it and justify it using a quote without its context or even understanding of why that quote was said or why that biblical passage was written. It's wrong, and it's also deranged. Everything that's happening right now to continue to justify what the state of Israel is doing, the modern state of Israel is doing, which has nothing to do with the ancient Israel, the biblical Israel, is they are now trying to censor us, trying to control our speech. They are murdering children. And so the more that you defend this and that you pretend that this is what God wants, the more that you will expose yourself, right? The more that you expose yourself. Even this headline is crazy. This came out that like their TikTok, which we covered this before, their moderation team, like IDF soldiers, and Bibi Netanyahu saying, we're taking over TikTok. Like, my agents are going to get that in a purchase. That's what needs to happen so that we can win. Announcing essentially psychological warfare on the American people because they don't think we can think for ourselves and decide who we want to follow on X all by ourselves. Apparently, they're going to ban the juice box emoji, right? Because people, because they can't talk about the modern state of Israel, have been using like the apple juice because juice can sound like Jews. And so they're now moderating that. And I will say this, that's going to be funny because it's just, it's going to be a game like whack-a-mole. And all we can do is laugh at it because these people are savvy. These TikTokers are like, they're pretty savvy on the internet. They're going to be, someone's going to be announcing like, let's use this emoji instead. From now on, this represents the modern state of Israel. And before you know it, there's going to be no emojis that are allowed on TikTok. Actually, it would be funny. The funniest thing that they could possibly do right now is every time you want to talk about Israel on TikTok, use the term TikTok. And see if TikTok will ban TikTok from TikTok. That's how we win. Like, if that happens, we win, okay? We get to laugh forever that we made TikTok ban TikTok because TikTok is actually code for Israel. The modern state of TikTok, that's what I want you guys to do because that would just be funny. And we have to actually have fun because it's getting so crazy. We have to actually have fun and continue to smile and laugh and to be happy warriors for truth because Charlie always believed in being a happy warrior. That is just a fact. Anyways, you guys, let me read some more of our sponsors for today before I get into some of your comments. First, I want to tell you guys about Pure Talk. Our society works because of the freedoms guaranteed by the First Amendment. Everyday Americans should be able to speak openly about honesty, family, and traditional values without retribution. And that's a principle that Pure Talk proudly supports. They sponsor my show, which allows me to stand strong behind the microphone every day and share the truth with you. You want to support brands that defend freedom and pro-American values, I encourage you to switch your wireless service to Pure Talk. You're going to get great 5G coverage on an extremely reliable and secure network. And with plans from just $25 a month, you'll save a ton of money. Pure Talk believes in creating American jobs and supporting small business. So if you're a small business owner, you can save even more while enjoying white glove service. Stand with companies who share your values. Go to puretalk.com/Owens to switch to my wireless company. Again, that's Pure Talk, and you'll save an additional 50% off your first month. PureTalk.com/Owens today. Also telling you guys about Nimi Skincare because there is a reason that we all love the fall, the crisp air, the changing leaves, the season of transition, but it's also pretty tough on our skin. And it's the end of the summer sun, the new autumn wind, and it can leave us, our skin especially, looking tired, dry, dull. So if you're looking in the mirror and feeling like your skin has lost its radiance for the season, then I'm going to tell you guys about my go-to, which you guys know is Nimi Skincare. Nimi is the reason that my skin stays clear, firm, and glowing no matter what the weather brings. Their three-step anti-aging routine is the perfect defense for this seasonal shift. It's packed with powerful, clinically backed ingredients that work to restore your skin's barrier, which is exactly what you need to fight off that dry autumn air. It also boosts collagen production to help with those fine lines. It locks in deep moisture and it brightens your complexion, bringing back that healthy glow that you had in the summer. Here's why I love them most, because they're American made. In a world of skincare that's dominated by a lot of foreign brands, Nimi formulates and produces everything here in the USA, and they deliver world-class quality while staying true to the values that they hold dear, which are faith, family, and freedom. So you shouldn't have to compromise your values to get incredible skincare with Nimi. You certainly don't have to. So as you prepare for the new season, make sure your skin is prepared too. You'll get an exclusive 10% off your order at NemiSkincare.com. If you use code Candace10 at checkout, support a brand that supports this country and see the results yourself. Again, that's NIMISkincare.com with promo code Candace10 for 10% off. And I want to remind you guys about American financing too, because the cost of everything is out of control and many people are relying on credit cards to cover essentials. If that debt is piling up for you, we should know that you're not alone, first and foremost. Americans collectively owe over $1 trillion in credit card debt. You might have considered reaching out to my friends over at American Financing, but maybe you hesitated because you don't want to give up that low mortgage rate that you're enjoying. Well, you should know that there is good news because they've created the Smart Equity Loan, which is a solution that's designed to help you take control of your finances without touching your current mortgage. You can, unlike a HELOC, rather, which can have varied interest rates, the Smart Equity Loan offers a fixed rate, which means one predictable monthly payment, which will give you peace of mind. This loan allows you to leverage the equity in your home to pay off your high interest debt, free up your cash flow, and keep your existing low mortgage rate intact. It only takes 10 minutes to get started with no upfront or hidden fees. Call American Financing and start saving now. Call 800-795-1210. That's 800-795-1210. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. That's Owens. That's AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. Camrys Owens. Camrys Owens. Somebody wrote me a message and was like, Candace, you said your name wrong. They missed the Operation Mocking Pastor joke. Camrys Owens is my pastor stage name when they're talking trash about me. I actually loved that so much. All right, let's get into some of your comments. What is on your mind? I'm going to be in so much trouble, man. I'm going to get off here, airwaves, and be like, she's on it. She is just, yeah, I'm there. I'm there now. I just don't like it. I just not getting the right vibe. And I know everybody else feels it too. And I'm just really tired of these influencers making the videos or all saying the same thing in a different way. I think we're dumb and like it's all happening organically. It's like, it's just tiresome. It's really tiresome. So if I have a take on everybody so we can get some truth, then that's what it is. That's just what it is. Jennifer Murchison writes, praying for your safety, Candace. Keep digging, please. You are onto something. We need truth. Thank you, Jennifer. That is a massive donation. I really, really appreciate that. All of you guys that have been donating to the show to support us, like, I just want you to know, like, we really appreciate it and we see it. Melissa Forberg, similarly, the really nice donation here. Spent the weekend researching the Kabbalah. It was, to say the absolute least, terrifying. Thank you. Yes, it is very important. Of course, if you are in my book club, we're about to really get into it. By the way, tomorrow we start the book, which they don't want to resell, which is crazy. I don't know where David Bacon's children are, the author of the book. He is Jewish himself, but I'm just wanting to know that you're being, like, they're blocking money from you. They don't want the public to read this book, which you can download and find it online for free. But like, still, it's pretty crazy that they are now realizing people are catching on. That book will dive into the Kabbalah. It's very important to know. Similarly, like I've said from the beginning, we have different denominations within Christianity. That's kind of what this whole episode has been about. I don't know why one, like, I don't know why so many evangelicals have such vitriol for Catholics. The feeling is not mutual. Genuinely, the feeling is not mutual on the Catholic side or on the Orthodox side. And so it's interesting to say the least. But similarly, within Judaism, there are different sects. There just are. And we don't realize that. We don't know what they believe in. We just go, oh, well, it's Judaism. It's just, you know, it's the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. No. There's also the Talmud. There's also the Kabbalah. And to just not actually study and understand all of those differences, it makes us extremely ignorant and very likely to be indoctrinated into one of those religions, convinced that it's actually modern science, which is what's actually happening. I think we kind of live in a Kabbalist society more than anything else. And I think that this book that we're going to read will help you get there. We go there in the book club. We go there. And so if you'd like to join the book club, we are starting a new book tomorrow. Tomorrow will be an introduction to that book. We will wrap up this last book that we read, which is similarly terrifying, which is The Assault on Truth. The scales will fall from your eyes if you read The Assault on Truth to understand how they will lie to protect the most evil people in the entire world. You have to destroy your belief system about Sigmund Freud, and then you're ready to learn about what Sigmund Freud actually, what his major contribution was, and that's the book we're diving into next. Sigmund Freud and the Jewish Mystical Tradition is the name of that book by David Bacon that we will be starting on tomorrow's book club. Lauren Hulin writes, you mentioned the suspicious way so many of the individuals surrounding Charlie's case are new to their role. I live in Dallas, and I noticed after the ICE shooting that Daniel Comeau, the Dallas police chief, is new to the role as of April. We are all being lied to. Yeah, it's almost like they're like actors. You know what I mean? You're going to just play the role of sheriff when we do this thing. You're going to play the role of this, and everyone's going to be so new. It's pretty lame. It is pretty lame. It again, questions we're allowed to ask them. Expose the Truth writes, I have been a Catholic my whole life and attended a non-denominational church once and found it to be cringy, like that pastor that you showed the video of. Keep fighting for truth. I'm sure Charlie is cheering you on from heaven, praying for you. You know, actually, to tell you how emotional I was after Charlie's death, it was really just not myself, obviously. But I was upset. I was almost upset with my priest because I went on Sunday and I expected him to like say something about Charlie Kirk, which is not what he should be doing. Like you can dedicate a mass to somebody, but he didn't say anything about Charlie Kirk. And I was like, oh, like, I don't like that. And then now that I've removed from that, I actually appreciate that. Like, that is what I actually find that I love about the Catholic religion is like, there's no political bent there. Like, that is what I love. And I attend, you know, the Latin mass, and what I was upset with, I now really appreciate in the retrospect that, you know, there's no drop of politicism when you're in the room. Jennifer Barney writes, I admire you so much. It's easy to drop something and go with the flow. Don't drop this. Something is not right. Thank you, Candace, for being our voice. I'm grateful. I'm actually so grateful I can be your voice. And I'm grateful that you see that when they're attacking me, they're just kind of attacking people for asking the most basic of questions. And again, I'm so grateful to Tucker. I think he's also one of our voices. He immediately interjects. He's like, well, let's be fair here. The feds have lied about everything, always. So why should we think this is different, especially when they're dropping these weird text messages? So yeah, I'm grateful that you guys trust me to be your voice. And obviously, you guys were kind of all on the same squad here. So it's because of the information that you're giving me that I'm able to even platform it. So I have so much gratitude for you guys as well. Every morning I start the day with gratitude, and I always say how grateful I am for the platform that I have been given by God and the people that have invested in me by just watching and hearing what I'm saying and standing up for me when I can't stand up for myself because I'm being attacked from every which direction. So from the bottom of my heart, I do want to say thank you to you guys. Moderator Marzi writes, Rob O'Neill, the guy who shot Bin Laden, questions the story of Charlie on Piers Morgan's show. Also, the South African ambassador to France was found dead in a Paris hotel. Oh, no, France. France. It's hot right now, France. France is... you guys already know. Look, I want to say this. Make sure I read all of this. Oh, iBudget also asked, what's the update on your Australian visa status? I want to answer that real quickly. Your Australian fans need you. You know, the Supreme Court of Australia heard, I don't think it's called the Supreme Court, you guys call it something else, but it is your Supreme Court, heard our arguments, and we are still awaiting a decision. Obviously, we can't rush them in their decision, so you will be the first to know when we hear back. Speeches on the line, but of course, we will always respect the decision of any country. We've never been in trouble, so it's weird that I can't travel to Australia. It's very strange to me. Everybody else can travel to Australia that's been in tons of trouble, but that is the power of truth when it is spoken. That is what is so amazing. All of the money in the world that Israel has, the money that they spend on influencers, the people that have been assassinated by trying to get them to register under Farah, presidents, everything that they have done, and every piece of that carefully woven tapestry of deception is falling apart because people are speaking truth. That is why free speech is important, right? That is why it is the single thing that they want to attack first, is because truth, when spoken, that's Christ. Christ is truth, right? It is that powerful. And that's something to be amazed by, to be amazed that they are scrambling and they want us to stop speaking and to stop communicating and to shut down communications. It shows you the power. You know, the power of Christ, truly. I will say in closing, and going back to France, if I found Brigitte's penis, I will find who killed Charlie Kirk. We'll see you guys tomorrow.